Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast in our series, Lessons from 2018. With our national conference speakers. And joining me today on the podcast is a repeat performer. I've had him on a few times, the head football coach at St. Johnsbury Academy in Vermont, Rich Alercio. Rich, it's always great to talk ball with you.
Oh, it's great to talk with you, Keith.
Well, Rich, every season, I had Chuck Kyle say this on the podcast last year when we were doing this series, every season is like a book, right? And I think you would agree that you look back over the course of your career, there's not one season where you say this was exactly like this season. There might be some similarities, but they're all unique. They're all going to paint a different picture over the course of the year. And, you know, you look back on it now, you look at this time, and certainly there's a lot of things that we could pick up from, you know, what we just went through as coaches. So as you look back on 2018, what are some of the things that you've learned from this season?
Well, I would tell you that first and foremost is that halftime adjustments aren't just for one game. They can be made at a halfway point of a season. And, you know, I think, you know, I take a lot of pride in what our staff does, particularly our defensive staff, in making halftime adjustments. And if you look at our score differential, first half, second half, for the 6 years we've been together, there's quite a large difference between the two of them. But, you know, this year we made a critical halftime adjustment of the season. You know, 4 games in, we're the undefeated defending state champions from 2017, and we find ourselves at 2-2, and we lose by one on the road against a team that we put 60 up on the year before. And really, just on the drive back, the hour and a half drive back, we as a staff, you know, made some halftime adjustments and decided to meet with our players in the locker room as soon as we got off the bus, and then implement some stuff that we did differently starting on Monday, and made an enormous difference. First half of the season, our score differential, we had scored 183, gave up 138, and for the other half of the season, we scored 203 and gave up 7. So there was an enormous difference in how our team played after our halftime adjustment.
The tale of two seasons there, Coach. So in going through that, I'm sure you spent some time with your coaching staff and with the players too, but probably with the coaches first, figuring out what is it that we need to do here to get things straight. How do you go about that process? I'm sure it's not an easy thing to sit down and admit, you know, at some point that, hey, things aren't exactly like we want them right now. So what did that look like for you guys?
Well, you know, first, it's just about getting everybody's ideas about what they think the issue is. I mean, you know, we were 2-2. You know, we lost by 2 in one game, went for 2, didn't get it. Another one, you know, we missed a short field goal and then gave up a 2-point conversion late and lost that one. And, you know, so, and we had played well. We had scored a lot of points. We weren't playing well defensively, though. We were giving up a lot of points. And really, it was about getting together and thinking, you know, what are the issues? One of the glaring ones is, you know, we went from, in that great 2017 season, we had 16 seniors, great leadership, guys that went on and played college football. We had 6 guys go on and play college football. This year, we only had 6 seniors. So, you know, one of the first things we identified is really there's not a lot of leadership, and only 3 of them were returners. So we started to talk about, you know, how we could help with the leadership, how we can help get guys to step up, and how we can help kids recognize what we're lacking and then start to implement it.
When you identified those things, Coach, what became the plan then? How did you guys go about, you know, making those adjustments, implementing that? And really, kids aren't always understanding why you're making changes or doing things or what the message is. So making sure that the message was clear to them and the plan was clear to them is, here's where we're going from here.
Yeah. Interesting what the biggest issue was is we had a very good quarterback this year. We, you know, wound up setting all our records, set a state record, just got named the Gatorade Player of the Year. And we had a lot of younger players. You know, most of our team was juniors, so all those kids were sophomores on our state championship team. And I think there was a sense of just an expectation that we would win and the quarterback would score enough points and ultimately we'd be fine, which certainly wasn't the case. We were scoring a lot of points, but we lost those 2 games, sure. You know, and really the other thing that was very interesting, when we went back and watched our first 4 games, there was something that was glaringly obvious in that our kids weren't really celebrating their successes. If we scored a touchdown, we, you know, made a big play, it was almost like, well, that's what we're supposed to do. We're expected to do that. You know, we're the defending state champions. So we got together as a staff and came up with a couple things. One, we embraced the words energy, effort, and enthusiasm. And we didn't think we were playing with those three things. So we wound up printing up signs that said Hilltopper football, energy, effort, enthusiasm. We printed out dozens of them, and we put them on everybody's locker. We put them all over the locker room, all over the locker room floors, any place where our kids would be able to be visible in our football area. And then, interestingly, the other thing we did to send a clear message to our players is that Monday, after that, you know, that last loss on the road, after that that meeting that we had, we actually, as part of our Monday practice, we practiced celebrating. We had each kid score a touchdown in the end zone. We had all 11 guys run over and congratulate him, and then he ran to the sideline, and the bench players all, you know, got all over him. And we did that with every one of our six ball handlers. And the kids got such kids, they were like, all right, coach, we get it, you know, but still they had a ball, they went over, but it was a lot of fun. And then there was a dramatic change. You know, it just, you know, in everything that we did, we sought out opportunities to celebrate people's successes. It wasn't just like, well, we're supposed to, we're the defending state champs. It became everything that we did well, everybody celebrated. And then we had much more fun doing it.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty neat idea there. And behind that idea, you know, obviously the signs, the messages, those are important. But what you did was you went out and taught them the behaviors that you wanted. You not just told them, here's how you do it. You showed them how to do it. It's something, I did a podcast. I'll link it in our show notes. I think it was at the beginning, not of the 18 football season, but the 17 football season. And I talked about kind of that idea. And, I had a team that was just quiet. We had that practice. I want to say it was at the end of like the first full week of two-a-days on a Saturday, took a big portion of it and put every unit out on the field and had something happen good to them where they had to go out and, you know, celebrate. Now, you know, at that time you got to watch kids being goofy and stuff, but we also used that as an opportunity to explain the rules to them. And that's not necessarily what you were going at this point, but I think that what it really reinforces is that we have to not just instill the ideas, we have to instill the behaviors that we want to get the results that we want.
You're absolutely right.
So, Coach, obviously the team responded, as you shared with us. Looking back on that now and what you did, do you think this is something you'll go back to now, that this will be part of maybe some of your preseason repertoire?
Yeah, there's no question about it. We'll put it right in. We'll probably run it in the summertime. We'll do a drill where we do it, and maybe spring practices coming up in March. We'll have a day, you know, we won't tell the players, but, you know, we'll have a day that we target during the summer as a coaching staff, say today, you know, this is going to be the celebration day, and we'll do it as a reminder, maybe kind of at the halfway point of the summertime when it starts to get a little stale that they're practicing for 7-on-7s for a month or so. They haven't played in one yet. So we'll do something fun to kind of liven it up a little bit there, and then we'll script it at some point, probably around the same thing in training camp when maybe it's starting to get a little bit stale. You know, we're going up against each other. We'll do something fun like that, and we'll practice celebrations again within the rules, though. Obviously, we don't let them spike. You know, we don't let them showboat or come up with any theatrics. So it's very they don't really realize it until we say, okay, let's do it. And it's kind of funny, too, because the coaches get involved with it, too. I mean, we show them, you know, what the celebration should look like. So we get a kick out of it also.
Yeah, that's great. I love that idea. Coach, as you're looking at other aspects of the 2018 season, some takeaways from it, what are some other things that come to mind?
You need senior leadership. And I think one of the issues that the sport's facing right now is losing kids. Numbers are dwindling across the board, that if you have one of those years where you just don't have, I mean, you just have a small crew, it's tough. In high school football, I mean, seniors make a difference. You know, again, we had 16 seniors in 2017 and dominated in the state. You know, and this year we had, I think our quarterback may have been one of the best football players to come out of the state in 20 years. And we wound up 7-3 losing in the semifinals because we didn't have enough around him with only six seniors. Three of them were returning starters. Actually, one of them hadn't played since his freshman year, and we just decided to come back out as a senior. So I think that, you know, trying to maintain a strong nucleus. So for us, you know, going down to our eighth grade kids and talking to them how important it is for them to stay together, to come to the academy together, stick together, you know, and come through your 4 years. You know, I think we really need to do everything we can as coaches to make sure that we don't have another group where there's, you know, only six kids. You know, you're looking to have double-digit senior classes.
Yeah, I had a coach on. I'll have to look up the episode, and I'll link it in there. But I remember him last year talking about their goal really being, you know, with those younger kids is to get them to be seniors, that they wanted to have a bigger senior class, and they put a focus on it. And I know around the country, we're hurting for numbers. You know, I'm in Northeast Ohio. I know Ohio is one of the biggest states that's seen a drop. I want to say it's something like somewhere around 20% since 2009, I believe, is the year that it's dropped. And last year was kind of the first time I started to see programs across Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland and in the suburbs, that they didn't have freshman programs, that they were canceling JV games, that they were having to put together seventh and eighth grade teams. And I know in different areas of the country, the numbers are hurting. We have to do things to build those up. I mean, what ideas do you have that you could share with coaches on how we can continue to build these numbers and keep kids coming out for this great game?
Well, yeah, I think one is understanding the millennial generation. And I know I've talked a little bit about this. You know, I think we may have touched it in a podcast. Is that I don't think you can coach now the way you and I were coached back in the 70s and 80s. You know, that I think you have to be much more understanding of the differences of this generation. We are extremely demanding of our players with their time, their commitments, their efforts. But I still think they have to be, you have to be able to talk to kids in a level that they now understand. Kids now want to know why. You know, back in our day, you didn't ask why. You know, so I think we have to be more understanding of this generation and be more player friendly, you know, to be able to make kids comfortable in our programs. You know, it's okay to do what we do. But they have to understand why. There has to have parent buy-in. So we have parent meetings where we explain everything. We give them a calendar. We lay it all out, tell them why we do it, so that everybody understands why it is we're doing what we're doing. And I think by us being a little – and again, I think you have to be a little bit more tech savvy too. You got to be able to communicate with kids, you know, through the social media outlets, to be able to have them recognize that you understand who they are, what they are, and how they want to be treated. It's interesting, you know, that old saying, you've got to treat people how you want to be treated. Not at all. You want to treat people the way they want to be treated. So I think that's a critical component, because how I was treated as a football player back in the 70s and 80s would never work now. So I make it a motto to be able to say, we got to treat our players the way they want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And again, I think you can keep people. Now, again, sometimes you just get a small class like this where there just aren't a lot of athletes. But for the most part, we've got to look to keep 12 plus in every class.
I know in talking to high school coaches about this issue in numbers, a lot of times they talk about, you know, they get it. They're making those changes. But making sure that happens down through the lower levels is tough. And I've heard coaches even say, man, I kind of wish we didn't have youth football because I can't have full control over some of those things. I mean, what do you think we can do as coaches to help out those younger levels and, you know, keep kids coming out and having fun? Because really, I think it has to be at that level. But this is a very fun experience. I mean, I can remember, Rich, going – to my first, peewee football practice, and my dad ended up pulling me. I think I was in fourth grade at the time, and he was a high school football coach, and I mean, it was miserable, and we just had, you know, guys are running around yelling and screaming. I mean, it was definitely a command and control type of environment. Yeah. You know, coach tells you to do something, and you know, it's tough. Now, I went back to it. I love the game, but I went back the next year and played every year since, but. A lot of parents, you know, my dad loved the game too, but you know, a lot of parents maybe won't bring their kids back to that now if they have a bad experience.
Right. I would tell you this, you and I have something in common then, because my first year in Pop Warner football was one of the most miserable years of my life. I hated every minute of it. I hated putting my uniform on, getting dressed. I remember the drive. It was horrific because, again, how we were treated. You know, strict Italian Catholic household, get in the car, we're going, and you're playing again next year. But I had a phenomenal high school experience and a great college experience, but very, very sensitive to that. So I do think it's important to be able to have great relationships with those guys. Now, we're in the same situation you just referenced. We have absolutely no control over our youth football program in our town. It is privately owned by a family who's very generous, and they love football. But again, they're going to do it their way, and they've done it a long time, and they've had great success. My youngest son actually won a state championship with them when we first moved into the area. Great people, great family, but they don't necessarily do things the way we would do them. So one of the things that we've started to do, two things I should say. One, they invite us to come every Friday night, or if we play Friday, Thursday night, to their practice. And we, you know, we get a chance to observe, we watch the kids, we talk to the kids, we get a chance to address them. So we have a different coach go every week. The other thing that we do is during our big rivalry game, which is, you know, two towns. Actually, we have one of the oldest rivalries in the country. We've been playing the same school. It's about 15 minutes away for 114 years now. Consecutively. Yep. So it's one of the old ones. And during that week, we always bring our youth program, our seventh and eighth graders, up to practice with us on the Thursday before. You know, Thursday is kind of a lighter day for us anyway, but we incorporate them in our drills. That family that runs the program just had a Christmas party that I went to, and I was talking to the head coach, and he said, you know, our kids always said, hey, where'd you get that drill? He said, I picked it up from the academy. So they're starting to use a lot of our drills, which I think are player friendly, safe. We don't go live. We don't tackle. And again, I think still some of the old school stuff of you got to go live, you got to tackle live, you got to block live, you got to do one-on-ones, you got to do Oklahoma drills. We never do. They see that we don't do it. They've seen our success, and they're somewhat adopting it. And I think that's the critical component is I think kids these days have no interest in doing like bowl in the ring, Oklahoma drill. They don't want to do that stuff.
Right.
No, they want to run around. They want to play 7-on-7 in their shorts. That's what they want to do. So again, we're very player friendly, and we want our youth program to see that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think you're right. Kids today see the game in a different way than we did growing up. I mean, for the most part, you think back to some of those days, we could play the game like in a hallway. I mean, we were just running between the tackles, and if you got a fast kid, you toss the ball and let him go to the edge. But you know, it was a different game. And now the RPOs, and you know, these kids understand that stuff because they're playing it on their Xbox, their PlayStation. So it's not like it's foreign to them. Like, we didn't have that kind of stuff either.
Yep.
I mean, I can remember maybe I don't know, Atari, and those guys didn't look like humans at all. They were just kind of little blocks moving around the screen, so it somewhat resembled football. But, you know, the kids today really understand, like, what the game's like, and obviously there's a lot more on TV now, too. So that's what they want. You know, they don't, you're right, they don't want to go out and play Bull in the Ring or Oklahoma or those kinds of things. They want to throw the ball. They want to do what they see on Saturday and Sunday on TV. Coach, the other thing we see over the course of the season is some trends develop in the X's and O's. Were there any things you saw over the course of this year that started to be maybe a little bit different than the last few in terms of either offense or defense?
Yeah, you know what? For us, at least, what we saw is a lot more teams playing man coverage against us. Where, you know, we do a pretty good job of trying to picking apart zone defenses. So we did see teams playing a little bit more man coverage against us, and blitzing based on protection. Where, you know, I'm sure that, you know, in some of the more populated areas where football is a little bit more prominent and a little bit more advanced, you know, probably been doing that for a while, but we're starting to see that up here now. Again, we're one of the few teams in Vermont that actually throws the ball a lot, especially in Division I. There's two teams in Division II that throw the ball as much or more than we do. So we started to see people getting a little bit more creative with their blitz stuff, not just calling blitzes, but maybe based on protections, being able to delay blitz a linebacker based on protections. And again, I think that stuff, you know, gives us a little bit of trouble and some of the stuff that we're going to look at being able to take advantage of in the offseason.
Yeah, I think a prime example, I think back to a college game from this year, I was actually in attendance at it, was Ohio State, Michigan. And you know, Michigan had really been making a living on a lot of man defense, and Ohio State certainly had a good RPO game and was able to hit some of those things, you know, all season long. But you saw a lot of, you know, the mesh concept, shallow drags, guys just getting the ball fast, guys getting the ball low and running away from that man coverage. And obviously the results were there. So I've started to see, especially a lot of those types of concepts really become popular this year as the answer for a lot of teams to the RPO is we're going to play man coverage.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. And again, so that we've seen that to be able to take away that, and then we have to be able to have answers for it in our passing game.
Coach, speaking of your own offense, it's one of the topics you're speaking about at National Conference. Before we get into the specifics of that, I wanted you to share your experience with National Conference. Last year was your first year. We had you do a little chalk talk in the vendor area there at our booth. Yep. Talk to us a little bit about this experience and how this conference, because I don't think you can call it a clinic, right? A clinic you go and it's all just X's and O's session. This is there's a lot more to it. But talk to us about your experience at National Conference.
Well, I would tell you, first of all, that I've been to probably 20 AFCA national conferences, you know, for college coaches. This, the USA football one is considerably better, a much better experience. And again, like you talked about, it's not just a clinic where you're sitting there, but the conference of being able to get people together and shared ideas. Where at the college level, everybody's about trying to network and try to find the next job, who's leaving, who's going, who's taking who. Where at the USA Football Conference, it was all about sharing ideas. I mean, sitting in conversations with coaches from all over the country. I remember being in a conversation with a bunch of guys from Arkansas and a bunch of guys from Ohio, and we're all sharing ideas of what we do. And I've implemented some of the stuff that we shared with and have gotten feedback from those guys that they were doing the same thing for the stuff that I had shared. So, I mean, just a phenomenal experience. Can't wait to get back there again. I also love the venue that I had a chance to present in. It was a kind of a small one, but it was right at the opening of the exhibit area. So as people were coming in, and I saw it started to get somewhat animated about what we were doing, the crowd started to grow, and it turned out to have a really good feel to it, and just a really neat experience to be able to present in that setting, and I've had a lot of follow up from coaches that were in that presentation from all over the country. So really, the neat thing is, and it's not for any other reason than to help each other. The coaches are engaged and looking to create and formulate relationships just for the purpose of helping their programs and their kids. They're not looking for the next job. So really it was a very selfless and very giving environment.
I would agree with you, and I've been to it twice now, and I thought you captured exactly the spirit of it there. Because I know we go to our local things or our regional clinics where we see, you know, a lot of guys around our state, we see opponents, and it's, you know, you're a little bit more, I guess, closed to what's going on. You're a little bit worried about sharing secrets, but you know, the spirit of this one is completely different, and you see that. I mean, and we give you plenty of opportunities throughout the conference to network with those guys. I mean, the dinners, the lunches, planned time, social time, and you got to admit, Rich, that the food there has to be the best ever experienced at a football conference.
That would be the next, just the sponsorships that you have to be able to provide. I mean, really, I would tell you that one of my first mistakes is I went out to dinner before going to one of those things because I'm used to getting a little plate full of nothing. And you maybe get one bite of something, but the food was so plentiful and delicious. It was great. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to leave my wallet in my room the next time I go.
Well, we have you in a bigger setting this year. You're going to be in one of the Chalk Talk rooms, one of the bigger rooms, presenting. And I think a topic, again, going into some of those trends we see developing, I've seen this more and more. You're going to talk about screen pass option. Tell us a little bit about, give us a preview here of what we're going to see in your talk.
Yeah, really, it's a spinoff of the RPO. Instead of identifying a conflict player on a run or pass scenario, we're identifying a conflict player on a pass or screen read. So, you know, to give you an example, we're going to identify, you know, the Sam linebacker or the inside linebacker to the strong side, and we're going to run a pass route against that individual. And generally, it's got to be a route that's going to happen in two or less. So it's got to be something, you know, an isolation read that happens in 1.5 to 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. The goal would be in 1.5 to 1.8 seconds. And based on what that guy does, if he expands and covers that isolation route, then we're going to throw the screen back to the other side. If he hangs in the box, if he gets caught up, if he's man on the back, then we're going to be able to throw that isolation route to the receiver that we have. So it is a one-man read on a defender to be able to say we're either throwing a downfield pass or we're going to take screen steps and then throw the screen. And the timing works well to be able to say it's this one or that one. So really it's taking the fad of the RPOs, identifying a conflict player and telling that one kid. And generally it's the one kid that's the hardest person to block in a screen. You know, it's that backside inside linebacker. If you run a screen to the left, it's the inside linebacker over the right guard who generally backdoors that play. And it's tough for any lineman that's bailing out to the left to be able to see him and identify him back to the other side. So we've been able to calm that guy down. It has dramatically helped our screen game. The other thing, too, is it forces the eyes of the quarterback to the read side. So if they do cover, everybody's expanded to that side with the eyes of the quarterback, and there's very few people back on the other side to be able to cover the screen.
And thinking of the timing of the play, and I've always been big into calibrating routes, something I picked up from Dan Gonzalez and then studied what Dub Maddox does with R4. But essentially, this goes back to really Homer Smith and those routes that would be considered rhythm routes that you're going to hit on the last step of your drop, those 1.5 to 1.8. So quick game is usually somewhere in that 1.2 to 1.5. So this can be stuff that is slightly a little bit longer than quick game. But typically, what kind of routes would we put into our screen pass option?
Yeah, so our favorite one off a drop back is our stick route to the tight end. So he's running a 7 to 8 yard outbreaking route. And the reason why that route now takes a little bit longer is generally there's going to be some type of traffic he has to clear in order to get that. So running that route on air is probably 1.2. But running that route against an end or somebody that's jamming him or trying to negatively impact his clean release is what gets us to the point where it's usually 1.5 to 1.8. But we're looking to throw that on the break. Or be able to expand on the screen. And generally, right around the time he's looking to break off to the side, that's when the linemen are releasing.
Coach, I know in using screens, and I've never really used the screen pass option. I've used some double screen stuff, but not exactly the same concept. Screen game-wise was always, for me, going to be kind of an 11-on-11 drill, but usually we would have kind of our offensive guys out there serving as, you know, shield holders or something else. It was really about the timing of it and those types of things. How do you practice the screen pass option?
Yeah, so we do it on air. We for the most part, no matter who you have out there, unless it's a live drill, which we don't run, you get a horrible look. Guys are always in the way. So we do it on air, and we'll have our first offense on, let's say, the 30-yard line going in, the second offense on the 50-yard line going in the opposite direction, and we'll run them both at the same time off the cadence of one quarterback. So we'll put the ball there, and we'll signal the formation, we'll signal the play, and then on the one quarterback, the starting quarterback's cadence, we'll have 22 guys running whatever the screen is, and we'll look to see that the timing of everything is exactly the same. So for us, it's not, I mean, it's we think somewhat irrelevant. And the quarterback doesn't have a read in that situation, or if we feel like having a read in a scenario, particularly after we've already gotten good at the read. But in the beginning part, when we first teach it, we'll put a coach there. We'll have the coach be the conflict player, and we'll either have him hang the box, play the back maybe in man coverage, play the receiver, expand. So he gets a read, but for us, it's more about the timing, and particularly for the running back, because the running back can't wait to run the screen, and early on, they always want to get out before the offensive linemen do. And it's a disaster when you put four D linemen in, or four offensive linemen that are pretending they're defensive linemen. So it's so much easier in doing it on air that they can sit and wait and understand they're not part of the count. They're not counting 1,000, 1,002. They're just watching the guard in front of them. If the guard goes, he goes. So for us, it's all about timing, and we don't want anybody in the way of our timing.
And we'll share one of Coach's clips on our show notes, so check those out. We'll put a diagram in there as well. Definitely want to get out to National Conference if you have a chance and see Coach Alercio and all the other guys we have there. For those of you looking to register, go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast. If you enter the code podcast99, you'll receive a discount on your registration. And look out for those things here as we near. I know we always have some decent offers there, so check those out. But we'd love to see all of you there. Coach Alercio, it's great to catch up with you here again. For our listeners, how can they connect with you?
My email address is my name, richalercio@gmail.com, or on social media. They can get me at O-Line, Twitter at O-Line Skills. They can also find me on Facebook at O-Line Skills and on LinkedIn as well. Twitter's probably the easy one. Again, at O-Line Skills.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time and sharing these ideas with us and some of the takeaways from the 2018 season, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing you in Orlando.
You and I both. Can't wait to see you down there in February. Take care, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.